of resources for the full ways and means to order, and we will open the public hearing of the state parks. And Susie, do we have any updates before we...
No, Mr. Chair. Today we're going to review the administration budget, their non-limited and grant program.
Okay. Mr. Carrier, do you have any remarks to make before we continue?
No, none of substance, Mr. Chairman. Just to say, good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here for the record. I'm Mike Carrier, Director of Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. And presenting this part of our budget today will be Jana Tindall, who's our Assistant Director for Administrative Services. Jana originally worked in parks a number of years ago and then went to the State Controller's Office and was Deputy State Controller for several years. And came back to our department as Assistant Director for Administration 2 years ago, not quite 2 years ago. And her special knowledge and skill has to do with the state's financial management system. And so I immediately put her in charge as the executive in charge of making sure that we got that FMS system project done promptly, inexpensively, and successfully. And she's done an excellent job of managing that project as well as her other responsibilities. So with that, I'll let Jana start her presentation, and then I will, at the end, just provide you a brief summary overview and walk you through some of the items that are appended to our budget.
I apologize for not raising this issue before, but I don't think we've covered it yet, and I want to make sure we will cover it by tomorrow night. And that is customer service questionnaires to your park users. Do you have those kind of, that kind of, or maybe that's what you're going to do next?
Okay. What page, which book?
We're in the school book, and we'll be under tab that's labeled administration.
Well, good afternoon. I am Jana Tindall, as Mike indicated, the Assistant Director for Administration. And I'm going to start off with actually an item that is not in your book, and it is a handout in front of you entitled Non-Limited Trust and Donations. And the first front of that page is basically the statutory authority that allows us to accept donations and grants, those kinds of funds, and then also is our authority for establishing sinking funds for our facilities and things like that. And we do have a number of trust funds established within the department. Some of them are very long-term and specifically dedicated to a particular park or a particular service. Excuse me. And then others are more broadly available for use. And if you have any specific questions on those, I'd be happy to answer them.
Is it in the presentation here outline and a total of all the funds you have within the department? And how much is in those funds?
In non-limited? We don't have that, but we'll provide that for you.
Yes. Okay, thanks.
Okay, well, let me direct you then to the book, and we'll start on page 78. And we've actually taken administration and broken it into three sort of distinct program areas. There's what we call the traditional administration, which is budget, payroll, personnel, accounting, those kinds of functions that everybody thinks of in terms of direct administration. And then we have indirect services, which are services that are provided to our customers and to our staff in a more direct manner. And then the third category is the recreational grants program. So on page 78, it kind of just lists, in terms of our programs, we, of course, include the director's office and our Parks and Recreation Commission. Personnel risk management and safety services are within that area, purchasing, contracting, and then those charges that are state government general charges are also rolled into that part of the budget. And our customers, of course, are as broad as you can get in terms of who's interested in what our department does, and we also provide services to our staff.
I mean, how often do you get an audit from the from DAS?
Pardon?
How often do you get an audit? Does DAS do an audit?
They usually include us in audits, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. in audits of the Measure 66 money. We get those every 2 years. And then if there's a broader audit that they're looking at us as a part of those, energy audit was a one that's in our example here, we're included those. They have not necessarily pinpointed us, except for the change of director audit, for anything specific. Actually, right now, we have auditors in our office that are monitoring our fixed assets in terms of a broader statewide audit.
And that probably has to do with your preparing to move?
Mr. Chair, no, it's just it's the cycle that they get into, and actually there was a change in accounting policy from the Government Accounting Standards Board that they're really following up to see that agencies are in compliance with that new standard.
Okay. And, Mr. Chair, the Secretary of State's office has agencies on a 3-year cycle, so they try to go in every 3 years and do an audit of the agency of different kinds. I think they're more like performance audits, but they can be more related to the financial side, too.
Mr. Chair, is that actually adhered to as a schedule? Do they get in there that regularly and look at things?
Lisa, do you know? They say they do. I haven't gone back and looked to see if they actually have gone in every 3 years. Do you feel like you've been?
I believe it used to be in the statute that they were required to do that, and I believe they had that removed, and so it's more of a
term
of need basis.
Yeah. Okay.
Page 79 is have one performance measure that we've tied to this, and it has to do with the stability of our funding and our continued non-reliance on general fund. And as you can see, we're projecting that out to be zero through 2005. And our intent, as Mike mentioned earlier, is to keep a stable funding and make sure that we are reliant only on our own sources of funds rather than having to come to you and request general fund.
What is the date that the lottery, Palomar 66, runs out?
2014.
14?
Yes.
Okay.
And sort of touch on some of our specific services and how those factors, one of them is our office relocation, of course, is going to be impacting our services. The big one for us is transitioning off the Department of Transportation's accounting system and onto the state's financial system. And we do have a lot of partnerships that we carry on with other state agencies. On page 81, is a bar graph of our expenditure history. And a big spike between 1999-01 and 2003, and that is primarily due to our financial management system, so those are one-time costs. And also there was some packages approved for some hardware purchases to put us onto a 4-year replacement cycle for our desktop computers and printers. Then in terms of the 03-05 budget, it goes down. There's a small package in here for completion of our financial management project and an increase in here of about $1.1 million in state government service charges, primarily related to us moving to the financial system, but there's also new charges related to workers' comp that we haven't paid in about a decade that are new charges. And all state agencies have that same situation. Page 83 are the central packages. And
perked my interest. You haven't paid the workers' comp in a decade?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
I had not heard that, I don't think, in any of our budgets before.
There was, I think, a balance in that account for several years, and they finally have spent it down and to the point where they're now having to charge all state agencies for that again.
Can I add, I don't understand what
this is.
Take me through this whole thing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, the workers' compensation?
Yeah.
It's the fees that are charged by Risk Management Division, and they've been offset for people who have injuries on the job. And
is it like in the private sector where you pay an assessment against your payroll amount?
Yeah, Mr. Chair,
you have job
Morgan, that's right. It's an assessment from Department of Administrative Services.
Okay, and how did the surplus build up?
I Not sure about that. Lisa?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, it's escaping me now, so we'll have to get back to you.
I didn't hear what you said.
We'll have to get back to you. It's escaping me now.
Thank you.
Could you tell us what the rate will be?
It'll be for the Mr. Chair. It'll be for the biennium, $181,614 for our department.
And what rate is that per $100 or whatever?
Mr. Chair, it's actually based on our losses over, I believe it's a six-year period, and they average out the losses and apply that to the agency. So.
And I didn't get the total number. Could you repeat the total number?
$181,614.
Does this affect all departments in the state then, or?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. That's my understanding. Yeah.
I guess I'm really surprised at how many budgets we've been through already. This is the first time I've heard this, unless I was really sleeping on the switch.
Do other agencies have this issue, or is this just germane to the Parks Department?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, it's all agencies have to pay workers' comp. And for some agencies, it's larger, for other agencies, it's smaller, because it is based on lost history.
But the issue of having excess money in the account, is that just an issue with the Parks Department?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, no, it's risk management has the account. They hold it as a trust, and then as that trust and has reserve has declined, then they've had to go back to assessing agencies.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, when the departments are presenting their budget, this shows up in package 030, and it's the state government service charge piece of that, and every department's budget that I've reviewed has had a huge spike, and it's due to a couple of things. One is their liability insurance increases and the recapturing of this workers' compensation piece. So you have heard it, but maybe it was kind of, it was passive, because we'll probably deal with that more when we look at the assessments, the agencies that generate these assessments, and we do the reductions in the budgets during work sessions for that. But I don't know how big a piece of the reduction will be due to that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, on page 84, we have our first package, and it is related to the completion of our financial management system transition, and this will complete our ability then to use the state's financial system and also to have a database that combines our statistical information, our financial information, and program information all into one database that will allow us to streamline our reporting and make it a much more timely system for us. So the focus primarily of this piece of it is to upgrade the point-of-sale system that we have currently in our parks and to expand that and then to automate the collection of that revenue information into the financial system. So it will replace some manual efforts.
I'd like to ask you to go back to 83 and run through that, all of those packages.
The essential packages. Go through all the packages, sure. On package 010 is the personal services adjustments that are related to mass transit taxes and those items that are not computed through the position inventory system, and about $13,000 for that. Package 020 is phase-in and phase-out of programs and one-time expenditures. And what you'll see in there is, as part of that transition from the financial system ODOT has onto the state system. And that's why you see a big $5.5 million reduction in that, because that's those one-time costs associated with the first phase of that project. 030 is standard inflation, and also the state government service charges increase. and 081 is the result of the third special session, a small reduction in salaries for management positions at salary range 38 and above.
Mr. Chair,
so we actually have a net reduction in this.
I see that you're backing out the management higher level positions because of the third special session reduction. Is the roll up and the salary increases that the governor has made the assumption won't be funded in 03-05, has that been adjusted out of this already?
Not at this
okay.
time.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, those adjustments will be made prior to work session, and we'll be bringing those into the committee.
Okay. If we can move on to page 85. I'm going to talk a little bit about our package, and I've actually brought some visuals along because I think it helps to explain this. The geographic information system that we're proposing, we're currently using services under contract for a variety of activities. We have the archaeology group, we have the master planning group, engineering group, and for all of their activities, these are important, but they're also very decentralized, and you can't cross over from one to the other and utilize the efforts. So I think most of us, when we talk about geographic information systems, is we're used to this kind of a map-looking thing, and you can tell sort of we're still in the Stone Age over there because we're hand coloring in some of the details on these maps. And what the geographic information system will allow us to do is take the resources that are already available for information that's captured by the U.S. Geological Survey folks, Bureau of Land Management, other state agencies, and other federal agencies, and apply it, and then just start layering information. So what I brought, a map from our engineering section, and this is actually Fort Stevens, just one small area of it. But you can see some of the topography of the area, and it's really hard to see, I know, because the lines are very faint, but there's like blue lines here that indicate water lines. There's other lines in here that would indicate sewer lines, electrical. What the geographic information allows you to do is go in and, you know, point to one of those things, click on it. If it's a water system, it will tell you how old it is, you know, where the shutoffs are, what the gallons per minute are, that kind of information that is buried in somebody's notebook somewhere. It also gives us park boundary information, gives us the age of how long the park's been there. It will give us information if we're doing forestry management in a particular area. It'll give us indication if we have hazard trees that need to be removed. You've had some questions about endangered species or protected areas. We can define those in there and be able to draw up information. If we're getting ready to do a project, we can go and see if there's perhaps an archaeological site that we need to be aware of, or if we find one when we're doing excavations, we can document it and put it into that file so that in future we have that information. The other nice thing is you can connect this to our engineering drawings, and so in this case where we've got a shower and restroom building, you could click on that and bring up the actual the architectural drawings of that building. Find out what facilities it has, how long it's been, where its maintenance schedules are. And when we get real sophisticated, this is our dream out there, is you'll be able to click on an individual campsite and find out what the attendance was at that particular campsite, what the average group size is, and, you know, even find out if there's reservations. So if they need to do some maintenance on that site, they can find out if there's a period of time that it's going to be more convenient to do maintenance because we don't have reservations.
So I have two questions. Will you be able to click on a picture of that site?
Yeah.
Right, well, I guess that's one question, but is it open to the public? Is this same information?
Mr. Chair, this would actually just be internal to our department. The potential exists that, you know, we have the online reservation system. You know, with the technology the way it is now, the potential is there to open it up to a little more information out there for the public about what a site looks like. When you go out there, you can say, give me a picture instead of just a
numerical representation.
Okay, page 86 is related to our office relocation, and our planned move-in date for this is about September 1, or at least that's the plan as it exists now. There's a combination of one-time costs and ongoing costs in this package. The ongoing costs are about $300,000, and that's primarily due to the fact that we're going to have more square footage than we have in our current building. And the rate per square foot is actually going to be a little bit less for us because currently we're paying rent, utilities, janitorial service, garbage service, everything separately. So that averages out about $1.45 a square foot, and the rate for DAS with their uniform rent is $1.40 a square foot. So the rate per square foot is going down, but the space is increasing, so that's why there's an increased cost.
So I guess the ultimate question is your staff increasing enough to warrant more space, or were you just overcrowded?
Mr. Chair, we're fairly overcrowded. We're kind of thinking about bunk desks.
Oh, good.
Okay, let's move on to the indirect services section then, and that starts on page 87. And this is those services that are more customer-oriented or directly related to those field service folks. We have the beach safety program. Oh, excuse me. Let me start with the heritage guide, which I provided you with. This is our parks and campground guide. And this is a very, very popular item with folks who use our facilities. Gives them a lot of information. And this is kind of a nice document because we were actually able this biennium to sell a little bit of advertising. It helped offset the cost for printing. The Beach Safety Program is our educational outreach program to encourage people to be safe when they're at the coast. This is quite effective. We go out to local schools across the state, actually. And we also have campfire programs and other special events. If there's kids' fairs or something like that, we'll attend those. And we try and particularly get around this time of year. Spring break is a time when a lot of families go to the coast and aren't necessarily cautious in terms of the, it looks fairly safe, but in fact, you know, sneaker waves and this next 2 days there's high wind and high wave warnings. So this is a very important program to us, and our goal is to eliminate the number of deaths and as much as possible from people visiting the coast. Volunteer coordination is a program where we have two ladies that work with our hosts, our volunteers, our friends groups, the Adopt-a-Parks associations. They're very, very active, and I think Mike mentioned earlier that we've got, in this past year, about 470,000 hours of donated time, and just roughly equating that, that's 226 FTE of people out there helping us. We're just really, really pleased that this is an opportunity that we can take advantage of, and people just love our parks, and it's very nice. And then, of course, the Reservations Northwest, the Camping Reservation Center, is part of this group as well. On page 88 is two more benchmarks related to this area. The first one, of course, is our customer satisfaction. And, Mr. Chair, you asked about surveys. We do surveys in conjunction with, I believe it's Oregon State University, on about a five-year cycle. And then the Oregon Progress Board also does a survey. I think theirs is an annual survey. So as you can see, we're doing okay in terms of what our guests think of us. And we'd like to keep that approval rating up, and knowing that you can't please everyone all the time, but we think it's a 94% is a realistic target for us.
May I ask a question?
Representative Morgan.
But with related to the data and the targets, why are they the same for 2000 and 2001 on the data side and the target side?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, it's because we've never used this form before, and so we just took our targets and made them match our actuals. They were plug numbers. So.
Oh, these are brand new performance measures?
Well, that one, we've tracked that one before. It's just, this is the form itself is new. We've been tracking our customer satisfaction for a number of years.
Mr. Chair, Representative Moore, we've done that. We tracked it, but we have not set it as a target. We've not set a corresponding target.
Okay.
So the only thing to do when you're doing it for the first time and you're looking at history is to force a target, which happens to match your actual. And that question came up yesterday, and I didn't do justice to the answer, but it was for the same reason that we actually hit our target on grant programs, because we knew how much we were going to award every year, and we had hit that number, but we weren't also required to establish a corresponding target.
So we could assume, if I might have a follow-up, Mr. Chair, that for when we come back in here in the next session, we'll have actual data and the same targets.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, that'll be correct, yes.
Thank you.
But this information doesn't tell us your vacancy rates in different parks or different types of parks or those kind of things, which I think would...
Mr. Chair, no, this doesn't, but we could provide that if you'd like that.
I think that would be helpful to us. Also, just asked Susie, evidently we haven't shown you a scheme such as this, but I'd be interested also in the types of complaints you have or the types of issues that are responded to with your, when you do your questionnaire to park visitors, and maybe if there is a pattern of issues that come up, it would be good to know how you dealt with that.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, actually, I have some information on types of complaints that we've tracked at our reservation center. Our manager at the reservation center is a very detailed person.
Is that in our book or two?
Actually, I just have a little sheet that I can kind of just summarize for you. We actually track the number of complaints in terms of quality of the services and then accessibility to our internet reservations. And those have seen growth and decline from the year 2000, which is when they provided this information. We had 1,364 complaints to the reservations center just on those two issues. And in 2002, we'd cut that more than by half for 989. The other issue, of course, is ability to get in to make a reservation. They get a busy signal. And we've been able to cut that down from a high in 2000 of over 2 million busy outs. And this part of it was due to some technology upgrades. And in year 2002, we had 69,000.
So, and 2 million represents the number of calls that came in and got a busy signal.
Yeah. Senator Messley, Representative Morgan, that's correct.
So that's a good improvement.
And that's why we looked at some really technology fixes to that. That we did an upgrade to our phone system. We actually brought on some additional temporary staff to kind of handle those peak workload periods. They have a very sophisticated system at the call center that allows them to track the volume of calls, and they can kind of then sort of see a pattern. The first of the week is heavier. If the weather's nice, the call volume is heavier. It's a lot of times very weather dependent. And of course, the advent of the online reservations have also given people another avenue to make those reservations without calling the center.
I wonder, the 2 million figure, was that when the computer was going down all the time?
Mr. Chair, that could be, yeah. No, these were actually
it would
phone
be,
calls. So.
If you could bring us copies of that sheet you're working off of tomorrow, it would be helpful.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, it's not that we're incredibly intuitive. It's just that we have a plan on the inside that it's very good about warning us about the kinds of questions that might come up and helping us prepare to respond to your questions. The other half of your question has to deal with, do we track other kinds of complaints? Because this just deals with the reservation call center. Mm-hmm. And Tim Wood, I've asked him to prepare, and I'd like to have Tim just sit in my chair for a minute and just talk to you about how he tracks the visitor complaints that come into our office and how we record those and how we respond to them.
Mr. Chair, I've I'm responsible in the...
Tim, I need for the record, please.
Yes, for the record, my name is Tim Wood, Assistant Director for Operations. In my office, I'm responsible for tracking all the complaints that come into the director's office, either by email, phone call, or through walk-ins at the front desk, or visitor cards, and those that are brought to the attention of the director. And we've had what I think is a low number of inquiries over the last several years. In fact, it's reduced. In 2001, we had 178 letters or issues directed to the director's office, and in 2002, it was 184, which is about half of what it was in the two previous years. And we track those by park, and we track them by sort of the nature of the complaint. So probably 3 years ago, one of the largest numbers of complaints we got had to do with dogs and pets in the parks. Right now, in the last 2 years, the single category of questions or issues is related to facilities. And the way we respond to those is if they come in by email, we respond to them generally within about 24 hours. If they come in writing or by phone call, we respond to them. We try to respond to them in about 48 hours. We direct them to the field to do an investigation to verify what the nature of the complaint was or the situation. And then we follow up with either a letter from myself or from the director or, if appropriate, from the field level, or we call them directly and talk with them. Our goal is to satisfy the complaint or the issue. Most of them we get resolved. Frequently, if it's an issue relating to poor service or facilities which were promised and weren't provided, we respond to them by providing them a refund and try to accommodate their needs in some way. I would also just comment, though, that of the 184 issues that were brought to the director's office in 2002, like 14% of them had to do with compliments for employees, and a corresponding number in the previous year.
And could you provide that to us tomorrow, too?
Mr. Chair, sure.
Okay, still...
Let me just expand on that just a minute. Mr. Chair, I think I can assure you that while this doesn't track the complaints that are received by field personnel, that with the way Tim manages field operations and my philosophy, the fact that I answer my own phone, my door is open, I answer my emails myself, that if a dissatisfied customer in one of our parks doesn't receive satisfaction at the field level, it does get elevated to me very promptly. So I feel pretty confident that what we're hearing are those unresolved issues from the field level, because I get very little feedback that customers didn't get satisfaction over a concern or a conflict that they had.
And let me just direct you back to page 88. The second performance measure is in relationship to the number of visitors in our parks. And I guess part of the satisfaction indicator is the fact that those numbers are growing. And so we think that if people were truly dissatisfied, they'd go somewhere else. We kind of talked about the factors affecting services, so I think we'll just move on to page 90. And in this particular area, the budget is really not moving around a lot. Between 9901 and 2103, we had some increases in the reservation center to deal with those busy out signals, and dealt with that through contracted temporary services. And then in the first part of this biennium, the state of Washington, who had been participating in the reservation center with us, chose to withdraw and contract for those services with a Canadian firm. So you actually see a pretty level budget. So there's a reduction in those costs related to Washington pulling out, and then the inflation and roll-up kind of bring that back up, so that's pretty even. Page 92, the essential packages. Package 01 is related again to the personnel services that are not calculated, and this is $19,000, almost $20,000, and again, mass transit tax. This particularly affects us because the people who work in those areas all work in transit districts. Package 030 is, again, just the standard inflation. And Package 070 reflects the Washington State withdrawal from the reservation system and a 405,000, almost 406,000 reduction. Page 93 is our package, also related to the reservations Northwest, the call center. And as in Tim's case, we are asking to convert temporary and contract service temp dollars to seasonal employees and get us in compliance with the statute and Department of Administrative Services policies. And we did, in kind of anticipation of this, create some limited duration positions this past year. And of the 13 people in those positions, 11 of them returned. This saves us a lot of time. Generally, the folks who are in the call center spend the first 2 weeks on the job being trained on how to deal with calls and learning our facilities. And if those people can come back and be reliable, it's much easier on us and reduces the time. We can put those people immediately onto the phones. And that concludes that section.
Mr. Chair.
It's Representative Johnson.
I apologize for having missed a meeting, and you may have covered this. Why did the state of Washington withdraw from our reservation system?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I'm not sure. I Mike may know because it was pretty much in progress when I came to the department.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, first of all, they were concerned about their inability to really achieve quality control because it was in our hands, not in theirs. So as that program developed from 96 to present, the first few years, as you may recall, were difficult years for the department, trying to get up and running, dealing with the customer complaints. See the benchmark there on data on just the number of busy outs people received. And so they were connected with us during the infancy of the program and during its most difficult time. And in handling those complaints, resolved that if they were going to deal with complaints and assure quality control, they needed to have their own program, as all other states do. So they began talking, despite our assurances that we were going to get this program, to a state of performance that would be very satisfactory to them. They'd start talking early on and had really invested in the decision to pull out and establish their own reservation call center before we had the opportunity to really make the improvements to the point where we feel very satisfied today that it's a quality product.
But I thought I understood that they're contracting with Canada.
Mr. Chair, we also contract with a Canadian firm. I don't want to say anything bad about Canadians today. there happens to be... We contract with a firm called Reserve America, which handles several of the state's state park campground reservation systems, and they happen to be a Canadian firm. But in fact, they are now owned by Ticketmaster, which is now owned by some other company. And so it actually is a subsidiary of an American company. And they provide the software for us. They designed the software, the reservation software, and they provide the web-based reservation component. We operate our own telephone call center out of Portland. What Washington State did is contract with a firm that happened to be a Canadian firm that provides both the software and manages their call center for them. And states are split about half and half. You know, some operate their own call center, contract for the software part of it. Some contract the entire service, like Washington does. We split it. And the reason we split it is because we want the quality control component really is the call center, the courtesy of your operators, how well they're trained, how well designed and responsive your phone system is when you get that very big volume of phone calls. And that's the component of the reservation system that we really need to control to assure that we're satisfying customer complaints about things like busy outs or inaccessibility or courtesy or knowledge of the operators.
How much capacity do you have with the new system, and how long will that last us?
Mr. Chair, could you? How much what?
I assume you have excess capacity in the system we have now.
Mr. Chair, are you asking about computer server capacity?
Well, I know we ran into trouble a couple of years, two, three, 4 years ago.
we have enough capacity now to handle all the additional.
See, we're increasing our usage all the time. More reservations.
Okay, I can answer that. Yes, we've invested a lot in the last couple of years in upgrading our servers and networking system and improving the phone system for that call center, that we feel very confident we can hire a significantly higher volume of reservation activity before we'd have to make additional upgrades. We feel confident for the next several years that we've got a good system.
Have you projected 5 years, 10 years, or we need to make more investments?
Mr. Chair, there's an industry standard that we observe on the replacement of servers and other types of hardware that is about a four-year turnaround, and obviously, you know, government agencies push that out. Well, everybody's pushing that out to a longer period now because of the recession, but we try to observe the industry standard of upgrading our servers and hardware either as they wear out or according to an expected life cycle. And at the time we replace those, if there's a need for expanded capacity to handle expected additional volume, we do it at that time.
Mr. Chair, I might add, too, that we're seeing more of our reservations moving to the Internet. Right now it's about 26% of the reservations we make are over there, and that's growing at about a 5% rate per year. So that helps us keep the call volume down. And even though our numbers are growing, it keeps us in balance that way.
So is the call volume growing, or are you picking up your gross increase solely on the Internet?
Mr. Chair, it's both.
Okay, they're both growing.
It's interesting, Mr. Chair, that people call in and reserve spaces when it's a sunny day. I'm calling on human nature there.
That was not a question.
No, that was a comment on human nature.
Okay.
And that moves us to the recreational grants programs. That begins on page 94. And these are actually four of our grants programs. We do have another one that's in resource management. Each of these grant programs has a unique funding to it and a unique target of individuals that can apply for those grants. The local grant program is the one that's funded with the lottery money, and that's a $5 million target to local governments, and also can be used by Metro in Portland and the port districts as well. The land and water grants are federally funded, of course, and are targeted towards local government, cities, counties, parks and recreation districts, Metro as well, and the ports.
Mr. Chair?
Jenny Morgan?
Can you give us a little information about what types of projects would be in the box that the Land and Water Conservation Fund has? I just have to turn like three pages back and all this is it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I don't have any details on them, but let me kind of give you sort of the sense of the programs. All of these, of course, are dedicated to recreation types of activities. They vary anywhere from a replacement pump for a swimming pool that's a municipal pool, to a skateboard park in a city. They can use it for expanding camping facilities, like a county park.
So they're all capital projects?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, the Land and Water Conservation Fund is capital projects, yes, which can include open space acquisition and can include major new construction and development as well as renovation and repair. And as Jana mentioned, the unique thing about the Land and Water Conservation Fund is it can include the construction of ball fields and playing fields, tennis courts, swimming pools, municipal recreation facilities, and in fact has funded those. The Land and Water Conservation Fund has been around since 1965 and has been funded every year through that period, except for a period of about 5 years during the late Bush, early Clinton administration, and then was just restored here in the last 3 years. It's provided over $235 million in recreation acquisition and recreation infrastructure investment for Oregon alone in the history of the program. And the grants that we make, 60% of the funds that we receive, we award in grants to local communities. And some of those are used typically to either acquire or develop a local park. We're using land and water funds, the other 40% that we receive. We use them typically to match our Measure 66 dollars to kind of leverage those dollars for greater benefit. And, in fact, our priority in this biennium is to use any of those land and water dollars we get to accelerate the Washington County State Park development.
Mr. Chairman, I have a follow-up.
Sure, go ahead.
How much is the state expecting to receive in 03-05 from this program?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, the number is subject to annual congressional appropriation. Right now, under the President's requested 04, fiscal year 04 budget, I believe the amount is just over $2 million. I'm sorry, it's almost $3 million for Oregon. In the 04 budget, that would probably be the second year of our 03-05 biennium because, again, the federal fiscal years and the state fiscal years don't do a good job of meshing. We would probably apply the federal fiscal year 03 land and water funds to the first half of our 03-05 budget, and that number was just recently set at Congress at $115 million, which will represent about somewhere in the neighborhood of $1.5 million for Oregon. And, again, of those two amounts, second amount and then the first amount, nearly three if the President gets his number. 3.9, good, okay. Of course, 3.9 is what we projected for the biennium. Of those, 60% is made available in grants to communities.
And 3.9 being the federal fiscal year 03 and 04 appropriations?
That's recollection, is that's how we reconcile the federal fiscal year and the
and so if you've got $1.5 million in may I progress with this? If you've got $1.5 million in federal fiscal year 03 and $3 million in the 04 federal fiscal year, do the funds go up and down like that? Or is it, I'm trying to get an idea on what kind of a revenue stream this is, how volatile.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, for a lot of years, the funds were set at the congressionally authorized level, which is about a $400 million limit that's congressionally authorized to be appropriated to the states and then divided among the 50 states and territories for this. For a number of years in the program, Oregon could count on something on the order of $7 million a year. It's very significant for Oregon in the early years of the program. It's only been since about the middle of the Reagan administration that the funds started to decline through the annual appropriation process fairly precipitously, and then were zeroed out for about 5 years and then restored. And in the, I think it was federal fiscal year 2000 that we first received funds again. And those funds have really been all over the board in the range of 1.2. Again, I'm newer to Oregon. I'm probably quoting some Iowa numbers here, but in the range of about $1.2 to $2.2 million per federal fiscal year.
Okay. And may I have one more? What's the grant process here? You solicit grant applications from local jurisdictions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, yes, exactly. We do that. We announce every year if federal funds are available that we'll be receiving grants, and then we have a committee of local representatives that work with our staff to evaluate and rank these grants, and then we simply award them based on the available funding until we reach the end of the money, and then they're approved by the Parks and Recreation Commission for funding.
And the makeup of the local committee, what's that all about?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, with each of these grant programs that award funds to some customer group like counties or city park and recreation departments, we prescribe and rule both the composition and how those committees will be appointed. And they include the folks that are actually working in those agencies as well as other what I would call third-party interested individuals, that may represent some organization that doesn't directly receive the funds but has an interest in the program.
And what's the criteria for ranking them in priority? Is there a set criteria?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, absolutely. In the administrative rules for all these programs, we have established criteria by which the projects will be evaluated and scored.
Could we possibly get a copy of those?
Mr. Chair, certainly.
Thank you.
And I'd be interested if you could do it for all of these different four categories, how much funds are available or what you expect for the coming year. You've indicated pretty well on the Land and Water Conservation Fund grant, but about for the local lottery funds and the recreational vehicle and the all-terrain.
Mr. Chair, the lottery funds, we've frozen those at the previously legislative directed level of $5 million a biennium. And what we try to do with those funds is award those at the beginning of each biennium so that they're allowed time to expend those monies within the biennium. I think the first year that those were available, or the first biennium those were available, they were kind of late getting that program up and going, and so there was some rollover of funds.
Is that basically the same criteria as the land and water conservation, or is that a different?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. We're trying to get all of these grant programs consistent in the criteria awarding them. We're still working with our all-terrain vehicle group, but they're coming along. And it makes it much easier for people who are applying for grants if they can go to sort of one standard criteria. And the other thing we're trying to do now is look at ways to mesh the various programs to perhaps, if one program can't fund a whole project or isn't necessarily the right vehicle to do that, that we can move them off to another program so we can still provide assistance.
Then would it be a true statement to say that the criteria for judging land acquisitions or Measure 66 lottery fund grants is the same as the criteria for judging the Land and Water Conservation Fund grants?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, on all of these programs, they have a little bit different criteria, and there's some federal guidelines on this, right? I'm wrong.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, generally yes, but there are some nuances, some dictated by the federal requirements associated with the Land and Water Conservation Funds, and some simply established by rule on recommendation of when we developed the rules for these programs, of the folks who are going to receive them. For example, the lottery local grant program, the Measure 66 money that we award, it's my recollection that it was the desire of the recipients of that, city and county park departments, port authorities, other metro park organizations, that we not allow them to use these funds to acquire and develop things like playing fields, ball fields, and swimming pools, because the Land and Water Conservation Fund from the federal government does already provide for those. So there are some differences that we can show you in the administrative rule. And then with regard to the Federal Land and Water Conservation Fund, the only requirements on there regarding the acquisition is that once you acquire or develop a piece of property with those federal funds, you create a permanent federal interest in those funds that requires that the property not be converted from its recreation use without replacing it in kind. So I do have the numbers that we expect to award in this biennium for each of those programs. The amount is about $4.5 million from the local grant program, the Measure 66 money, because we do pull some off for the cost of administration of that program. The land and water, again, based on the numbers I gave you, it's about $3.3 million is what we award. That's 60% of the money that we give to communities. The recreational vehicle opportunity grants, these are from RV registrations, and this is 10% of the RV registrations held and awarded in competitive grants, $732,000 for the biennium. And then the all-terrain vehicle grants, again, this is the program in which we inherited this huge balance from ODOT, and we're spending that down and also selling an awful lot of permits and generating even more revenue than we expected. We award about $6.6 million a biennium for RV facilities, or ATV facilities, and that includes maintenance, law enforcement, and other types of operational expenses for operating those kinds of facilities.
Mr. Chair? And what are the revenue streams into the all-terrain vehicle grants program?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, the largest revenue stream is the unrefunded gas tax money that's okay. related to operating those, and then
so this is the altering version of the lawnmower fund.
Yeah.
And the marine fuel.
Yeah. And then there's also a permit that they're required to have on their vehicles when they're operating off road, okay. and we sell those. They're $10 for a 2-year permit, so they're fairly inexpensive.
Representative Morgan, are you thinking that there might be some open space park applicants heading their way?
Well, I'm just kind of doing a personal catalog of all of these little land acquisition programs that are everywhere. I keep running into them. So I'm just interested in trying to collect them all into one place.
And this is a very small portion of what's available.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I'd like to offer a little insight on that, because that's come up before. When it came up in November when I presented the E-Board. In fact, we were asking for a little additional limitation for the Federal Land and Water Fund. There was concern expressed about communities using these funds to acquire land. And at that time, the grants that we awarded, there were about 22 grants that we funded from the Federal Land and Water Fund, and only 5 included acquisition by local units of government for parks. And I'd be very happy to provide you a history on the grant scheme awarded, say, in the current biennium, and what percent of those were for development or renewal or reinvestment, and what percent were for acquisition. Because I think that on the balance, we're seeing a lot less new acquisition for parks and recreation and a lot more emphasis on renovation, renewal, and development.
So is that also true, if I might, Mr. Chair, in the disbursement of your side of the Measure 66 money, that most of it is going not to land acquisitions but to modernization of existing facilities?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, absolutely. Of the nearly $50 million in Measure 66 money, we're, by your appropriation, we're only allotting $4 million a biennium, or less than 10%, to open space acquisition. $15 million is going to renovation and repair of park facilities with some new development. But usually, as I said yesterday, new development is in those cases where we simply determine that the old facilities don't warrant being renovated, that they either are not designed properly or they're so worn out that we need to build something new, or to diversify the overnight facilities we have with things like yurts and cabins. But the majority of our money is certainly going to reinvestment and reducing that backlog that was touted in the late 90s as the biggest need the department had.
But still, Mr. Chair, $4 million a biennium for property acquisition with the lottery funds is nothing to sneeze at.
We had that discussion, I think, yesterday, that that's a lot of land over a period of 10 years.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, as we talked about yesterday, that represents a target of about 500 acres of biennium that we've been buying, an average of about $8,000 an acre, and that average is high because we buy a lot of prime coastal properties that we want us to protect where the value is high. And I think that it sounds like a lot of money, but when you look at what we've acquired, and we've hit that on the average, with the numbers that I provided yesterday, that 500 acres per biennium has been a pretty good average for us.
Okay.
Let's go ahead to page 95, which is basically a summarization of the benchmark that represents not only the money that comes from these grant programs, but also adds in the matching grant funds that are provided by those grant recipients. And so as Mike mentioned, if you look at the calendar thing, between 2000 and 2001, you see a significant jump. And that's a combination of the all-terrain vehicle program being added, and then also in 1999, I believe, is when we started getting money back from the land and water. So you can see those programs starting to build over time.
I'm thinking ahead as the lottery funds drop off at some point, or if they should. Do you have the ability to use these kind of funds to maintain your own park service, or is this obligated, dedicated to
other partners?
Mr. Chair, in the ballot measure, I believe there was a provision that some of the funds had to go to local government as grants. Is that no?
Excuse me. Mr. Chair, there is a direction that those funds can be used to include grants to local communities, but there is no prescription in this side of ballot measure 66 about having to direct those funds to any one of the areas. You know, as I recited yesterday, they're dedicated for parks and open space acquisition, development, maintenance, operation of not only state parks but historic sites, and include a component in which we can provide grants to local government. It is entirely at the discretion of the legislature as to what in what way those funds are used for those purposes through the appropriation process. And that was pretty clearly expressed in 1999, I believe, because the legislature, when I look back at what the governor requested in his budget for the use of Measure 66 funds and what was actually appropriated, there was quite a bit of legislative direction given there.
Let me restate the question. I probably didn't phrase it very well. My question was that when the lottery funds drop off, are you able to use the land and water conservation, the recreational vehicle, or the all-terrain, any of those other three sources of funds for Oregon's, state of Oregon's parks?
Mr. Chair, no, not in the same fashion that we're using the Measure 66 money now. In small part, possibly, and largely no. The answer is no. Those are dedicated to either capital improvements or to special uses like the ATV riding areas that by statute would prohibit us from reallocating those to park operations.
But can it be allocated to Oregon state parks, or does it have to be allocated to counties or cities or other?
Mr. Chair, the Federal Land and Water Conservation Fund, there is the expectation, congressional appropriation, that the states will divide that money with local government, but it's subject to the discretion of the state as to into what percentage to divide that, if at all. With regard to the other grant funds, all-terrain vehicle.
State agencies.
Very frankly, without statutory changes, only the Land and Water Conservation Fund could be, at the discretion of the Commission, retained entirely for state park uses. The rest of the funds would require a statute change to direct those monies. And in some cases, it would be a pretty heavily resisted statute change, such as the case of the ATV funds.
Sure would be. I'm just trying to look out 10 years down the road.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate you looking out for our interests.
On page 96, we talk about factors affecting service and our governmental or interagency relationships. And obviously one of the biggest factors is that there are more recreation needs out there than there are ability to match those needs with funding. Okay. On page 97 is a chart showing the history of those grant programs, and again reflects the infusion of the ATV program and a greater infusion of federal funds and the lottery money going into the program. Page 99, the essential pack.
Representative Krieger.
Excuse me, I want to take you back for just a second. Clear back to page 89, where you talk about seasonal driven workloads, and then back to page 95, more outdoor recreational opportunity. Because if you go back to the yesterday, when you talked about the shift of many Oregonians staying in Oregon and having their vacations here rather than leaving the state, a lot of that was driven by the fact that we had a large abundance of salmon on the coast, and Oregonians started coming back. Fort Stevens was booked solid, and half the place was filled up with boats, traders, same with Brookings. you take a look at that opportunity that's provided, some of that comes from our hatcheries, a lot of that, especially in the Columbia River system. And so you go looking at promote outdoor recreation, makes me wonder if some of those dollars couldn't be diverted for the hatchery program if we ever got in trouble.
Oh, nice one, Representative Krieger.
Nobody's safe in this village.
I figured it would make him tighten up a little. But I think it is a fact that people did stay in Oregon, not just because of 911, but there was greater opportunity for the ocean, and people who historically had gotten away from being on the coast because we didn't have any opportunity in the ocean are starting to come back. We've had two or three consecutive years where that was available.
And we heard last night that the coho should be 167%.
167% of last year.
So,
Senator Duke's a smile.
It's nice to hear numbers. The women aren't doing so well yet, so let's get the coho.
Okay.
Maybe you should go visit Representative Krieger down in Brookings over the summer.
Okay. Page 97, where we were with the budget representation, and moving on to page 99 for the essential packages. Again, the non-fixed personnel services represents just mass transit and OPE associated with the things that are not calculated. The O2O phase-out programs, this is some unspent administrative dollars related to the grants. Package O3O is...
Representative Morgan?
Can you give us some more information on package O2O? What is this phase-in, phase-out all about? And did this money get spent?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, that actually, let me just clarify for 1 minute. That's what I thought. It was unspent money prior to biennium that we brought over and asked for limitation for at the emergency board, and so it is a phase-out because it was just one-time carryover money.
And it was administrative, the administrative piece of what the Measure 66 money or some of those federal programs, or what was it, where did this come from?
Right. Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, we had set aside a certain amount for administering the program, the grants program related to the lottery funds, and because we were late getting that program started, they didn't incur all the expenses that were anticipated, and rather than just leave that money set, we rolled it into the grants program and made that money available for grants. But because the way we're segregated in the budget document, we had to have the authority to move it to the appropriate area.
So in the federal, I know that in the lottery money, you don't have a piece that says that you have either a floor or a ceiling on the administration costs, I believe. Is that true?
Senator Messerly, Representative Morgan, that's correct.
Is that also true on the other funding streams? Is there a floor or ceiling on the administrative parts of them?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I'm not sure.
Let's check on that.
Yeah, we'll have to check.
Okay.
And
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, those are set by administrative rules, so the commission has established what the administrative levels will be on those grant programs. They're not constitutionally or federally. Well, there may be some federal requirements on the land and water, but the other funds are set by the commission itself.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I'll just expand. We're one of the few states that have been able to work with the National Park Service on the administration of the land and water fund that we actually assess each grant that we give an administrative cost, a fixed amount of administrative cost, and just add that to the grant amount from the local assessment. But I don't recall in the federal rules any limit on the state's administrative charges for that program. We will double-check that number.
All right. Continue. Package 030 is the standard inflation roll-up. And package 080 is inclusion of a June 2002 emergency board request for additional funding for the ATV grants, and we're continuing this into the next biennium budget.
I would assume, Mr. Chair, that with gas prices going where they're going, this is going to have a fair chunk of money in it again.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, it's gas tax, so yeah, it's been a good-sized pool when it came to us, and what we're trying to do is, with the assistance of the committee, determine an appropriate
so
way to spend
that down
and invest
against
money.
Volume?
Right. So if volume decreases, then their revenue stream will decrease as well, which may be the opposite.
Of
with gas prices going up, it may have the opposite effect.
Yeah, 50%. On page 100 is a package that would request $1 million to be increased for the all-terrain vehicle program and targeted towards acquisition of appropriate properties. And this was at the request of the ATV committee, so that when acquisition opportunities came up, that they could act on them in a timely manner. And if it's not used for those purposes, it will be just returned to their ending balance. And that concludes
my presentation. Is there a large demand for ATV facilities, parks?
Mr. Chair, the demand is growing and the area opportunity is declining as there are more and more restrictions on use of vehicles in forestry land. Private lumber companies who used to make their properties available have closed them because of vandalism or degradation of the resources. And so, and we just see in our permit sales, it's just skyrocketing demand for number of permits.
And I appreciate that because I know firsthand some property that I'm involved in, the damage that they can do, and we're trying to put up gates and all kinds of things to keep them out just because you can't afford to continue to maintain your roads. But the other side of that is the accidents and the dangers and the burden that we put on local governments to deal with
liability
with those accidents. And so I would hope that we're very careful when we do that to make sure that there are services and facilities and personnel available to help manage that.
Mr. Chair, this is one of those sports that I think 20 years ago no one expected to see the kind of growth and interest and participation that we're seeing this and personal watercraft. And they're currently selling about 500,000 ATVs a year in this country. The number goes up every year. And as Jana mentioned, the states that register them or the states like ours that simply sell a use permit for using public land are experiencing exponential growth in those funds. And the opportunity clearly is shrinking because of federal land management issues, because of the liability issues on the part of other units of government, because of the problems private landowners have experienced, the opportunity is shrinking. And the beauty of this program is it's one where the users themselves have said, we'll pay 100% of the cost of providing our recreation opportunity to set up the and administer the funding stream program responsibilities. So the future program clearly lies in balancing what remaining public land will be available with a certain amount of new lands that are acquired specifically and exclusively for this purpose. And so local governments that get into this certainly need to do it with their eyes open. And I think those that have done so. Coos County received a grant from us for over $800,000 last year to buy a piece that they're developing as an all-terrain vehicle park campground. Morrow County received nearly $2 million from us this past year to buy 6,000 acres in Morrow County. And for Morrow County, I mean, it was the County Board of Commissioners that really, I got a hold of this project and really believe in it. When you talk to them, they're almost as passionate as they are about a raceway or some other economic investment potential. They just see the potential for it to bring large numbers of fairly big spending recreations into their communities.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Dukes.
I suppose we could work a deal with the board and we could use the money to build a building and we could host school kids or Head Start or something during the week and then they could use it on the weekends. Maybe we could set up a shop class where they teach mechanics on ATVs.
Well,
it's the situation we get backed into because of all the dedicated funds.
And we've talked about it earlier, but I'm also concerned about the environmental
issues that we're going to be faced on some of these same properties. Who owns these properties? Are you allowing the local government their acquisition, or does the state buy them? And then?
Mr. Chair, we do not intend to take title to or end up operating all-terrain vehicle parks as part of our state park system. And the local governments that do acquire them take title, and say we also provide grants on a regular basis for them to provide for law enforcement, for operation, for reinvestment in the property. That's an important part of this program, is to assure that if we're investing these dollars, even though they're dedicated user fund dollars, to assure that those dollars will be there in the future so that those entities that are operating these parks can sustain them over the long term and don't otherwise abandon or convert them to other uses.
And that concludes my presentation.
Mr. Chair, thank you for hanging in there. 100 pages of presentation. I wanted to just wrap up and take you through the tab marked appendix. And the first item in there, you've seen in bits and pieces throughout our presentation over the last 3 days, and this is the summary of the Oregon benchmarks, performance benchmarks that the department established working with the Oregon Progress Board. And there's quite a bit more detail, as well as the data sources that we've used. And I won't go into detail, because much of that has been talked about by staff when they've made their presentations. We also provided on page 110, Appendix B, the budget notes that we received from the Listening Subcommittee in 2001. And we have written the budget note verbatim and provided an agency response, or how we responded to it. And I'm pleased to report to you that we have addressed, and I believe quite satisfactorily, not always on the date that it was expected, but that was done in consultation with the emergency board usually if we didn't meet the deadline. We've addressed quite satisfactorily all the budget notes, and I'm very pleased that we were able to do that. Appendix C, or page 113, we've given a brief description of the two audits that the department received in the current biennium. One was on the expenditure of Measure 66 funds. Following that is the letter that from January 15, 2003 to you about the receipt and use of salmon plate revenues.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this letter is required by statute and has not been seen or reviewed by the legislature before, and is being presented to you at this time to satisfy that requirement. So you might want Mike to talk about this a little bit more detail so that gets on the record.
You're on.
Is that your desire, Mr. Chair? Yes, I should have mentioned that we use this as the opportunity to make that report rather than scheduling a separate appointment in front of another substantive committee. But, we're pleased to report that of the salmon plate revenues that we've received of $509,000, that as of December 31, or three-quarters of the way through the biennium, we've identified $489,977 worth of expenditures that represent the resource management activity that we think were envisioned by the creation of the salmon plate and that revenue stream. On the last paragraph, we anticipate another $239,000 in expenditures that are under this biennium, which would bring our total to $728,000 expended relative to $699,000 received in plate monies. The one thing that I'd like to do, Mr. Chair, with this program in the future, not this biennium, because I think we need to put some thought into it, is to come before you in 2 years with a program or a policy option package that actually takes that salmon plate revenue and identifies specific projects that we will do, rather than report to you after the fact at the end of each biennium as to what we thought represented work that should have been done with those revenues. I'd like to give you some plans about, and I'd like to give you quality projects that we can point to and say that's something we wouldn't otherwise have done except for these revenues. And I think that was the intent of the legislation when it was adopted for the salmon plate.
How much do you project you'll receive coming back?
Mr. Chair, I believe the number is about $700,000.
Kylene, do you have?
$700,000 is our estimate for the
So you don't see if this was a big surge when this program started and it'll kind of level off?
Mr. Chair, it really has plateaued. We're actually concerned about erosion into the fund because of the popularity of the Crater Lake plate, because of the number of other bills for plates that are being considered.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I attended the Transportation Committee meeting this morning when they were discussing a variety of different plates and the legislation that accompanies their creation. And I'm sorry I didn't bring the form with, but one of the issues that came up was the initial setup cost of these plates, which is estimated for the ones that are pictorial, like the Crater Lake, $100,000, $150,000 expenditure to set those up. And the number of folks who have had plates set up either at the $150,000 level or at the much lesser level where you have the tree plate with a little inscription off to the side. And they had a large chart this morning, and I just don't recall the answer. Do you know the genesis of your funds to commence a salmon plate initiative?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I do not know the answer. I was afraid you were going to ask that question because I do not know. And I did not learn until I was down at Crater Lake last summer and they were talking about how they had to creatively raise $150,000 for their plate for the design, that there was that much cost associated with this. And I should have gotten the answer to the question about the salmon plate at the time. But I will research that and report.
Don't research it too hard because I have the answer upstairs in my office. I just didn't remember it. The point that I was trying to make was to see whether or not ODOT pointed out this morning that there were quite a few, and they were mostly the 501c3s, who had gotten not specialized plates but acknowledgement over on the left-hand side of the traditional tree plate and had left the general fund hanging, bearing the cost of that. And I'm certainly not implying that you or your department would have left ODOT hanging, but I was just curious as to where the original 150 setup had come from to start your salmon process.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, it's my understanding that on all plate projects, that was initially they were funded by the highway fund and with an understanding that they would pay the highway fund back. When the Attorney General ruled that those were not proper uses of highway fund monies, then it became the burden of the general fund, and the plate money in the same instance paid back the general fund, but it was an advance on those.
I think the Crater Lake was more creative than that.
Yeah, that ended up with the county fronting the money because they couldn't get it any other way. And so
they got paid back.
Yes. Well, I was surprised to see the list, and again, I'm not making any reference to your fine agency or you, but I was surprised this morning to see the sort of list of deadbeat organizations that had left the highway fund hanging. After
highway fund. The others are the general fund. There's only one that left the highway fund hanging, and we didn't want the buildings they built with their money, so we decided to leave them alone.
But I'll get that for you because I have the answer quite easily.
Mr. Chair, the last thing in the appendix tab that I want to draw your attention to, and this is also required, ballot measure 66 of the Constitution of Oregon requires that, in addition to the distribution of these funds for these purposes, that there is to be an independent audit every 2 years of the use of ballot measure 66 money. And it was decided that that independent audit could be done by the Secretary of State, and so they have performed their first audit, and it's attached here. We are required by the Constitution to report this audit to the legislature, and I wanted to use this forum and your committee as the opportunity to provide a copy of that audit report. And I'm very, I want to be opportunistic, Mr. Chair, and point out that on page 4 of the audit, it identifies that our department was one of two that fully met the expectation of developing output measures and outcome measures as required by the ballot measure. And the general summary of the audit of our department's use of the expenditures is that we were fully complying with the expected uses of Measure 66 monies. I want to summarize just very briefly. We presented to you in the last 3 days a 2003-2005 budget that looks at $161 million in revenues and $142 million in expenditures. We have presented you with 13 program option packages, of which half would represent ongoing costs to the department. Of those 13, though, three are really just brand new initiatives that we haven't talked about before. The remainder are either things that we have to do, like complete the development of the financial management system, or move to the new office on the North Capitol Mall, or pay our utilities, or their expansion of existing programs that we're doing, like the local historic preservation construction grant program. I've heard from this committee over the last 3 days emphasis on several things, but the ones that that I've really taken to heart and look forward to continuing to work with you on include the emphasis on the importance of performance measures, having meaningful performance measures and reporting on those to you. And as I said in my opening a couple of days ago, the wonderful thing about the financial stability that we're enjoying is it gives us an opportunity to really focus on goals and objectives over a long period of time and to maintain a stable structure and a stable focus and mission without ranging around at alternatives or trying gimmicks to get attention. And secondly, I've heard the message of the need for us, even though we are financially stable today, to use prudence in expanding our system, to acquiring more land, to developing more park facilities, to pushing the expansion of what we do, and to put as much or more emphasis actually in renewal and reinvestment and reducing that backlog that was touted a few years ago for the department as in new development. And third, I've heard the important message of not becoming overly reliant a source of funds like Measure 66, which may one day go away. And I really take that very seriously, that I think that we've got an opportunity over the next decade, assuming that Measure 66 will be around over the next decade, to begin now to plan and decide in a strategic way what other revenue streams we can generate or the existing revenue streams that we need to build upon to ensure that we're not over-reliant on any one source like Measure 66. Those are the things that I've heard and that I look forward to working with you on. Before I close, there was one question that you asked yesterday that I did not answer, and that was regarding OPRD-owned lands that are not developed or would be considered as potentially excess lands or surplus lands to the department. And, Mr. Chair, I have to apologize. I have been in meetings all morning and left the office without making enough copies to distribute to the committee, but I do have a copy that I can leave with you and would be happy to provide copies with the letter that we provide. But we've identified, we presented this to our commission a few months ago because they asked the same question. They routinely review our holdings and how we're using our lands. And we've identified a dozen properties throughout the state that I would categorize as lands with limited development potential for park and recreation use and that could be considered for disposal in some way. Now, typically for us, disposal means deciding that it would be best managed as a local park and either selling or trading or otherwise conveying without consideration that parcel to that local unit of government. That's the most frequent way we dispose of properties. We sometimes trade as a part of a sale. And in fact, until recently, we had over 1,000 acres along the Wilson River Highway that we weren't using for anything other than scenic corridor. And that's part of what we're trading to the Oregon Department of Forestry because it's adjacent to Tillamook Forest. But we're trading that to them to get lands from Longview that will constitute the Washington County State Park. But the dozen parcels that we've identified range in acreage from 6 acres to 228 acres. Most of them are landlocked, Some have use restrictions on them, on the title that we receive. They may have been gifted to us with some use restriction. But I'd say, and if the question that you're going to is, do they have some high asset value that the state might be able to capture, I would say that with the exception of one in Deschutes County, 40 acres along Highway 97, the answer would be no. They would all be of fairly marginal value, and even the one in Deschutes County, there's a real concern there about whether you could ever get access from the highway to develop the site. It's zoned industrial, but the Department of Transportation clearly would prefer not to have access off 97 to that particular site. But I'd be happy to provide this list to you, and I think what it would probably precipitate is a sitting down and really talking about these parcels, because the information here is very limited, and there's the old expression goes, there's probably a lot of hair on each of these in terms of the background and history and what you can do with
it. Let me just ask you, do you ever trade, when you're acquiring property, trade with the private party that you're acquiring from some of these types of lands, or does it almost always trade with another government entity?
Mr. Chair, yes, we do trade. And in fact, one of the purchases that we made for the Washington County Park recently included us trading some land on the John Day in eastern Oregon as part of the consideration. And we do that, not frequently, but we do it from time to time.
You're finished?
I'm finished, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to answer any questions that your committee has.
Well, do we have any questions? Well, I appreciate your very good report, and it's been a pleasure. You've been very responsive, and we wish that all the agencies that we deal with were self-sufficient. With that, I'd like to ask if there's anyone in the audience who would like to testify at this time. Anyone in the public? Not committee, we are scheduled for public comments tomorrow, so we at least need to gavel in and give that opportunity, but we haven't had really full house all week, so I don't know if we had any inquiries.
No one's expressed any interest. But we do have the responses from questions that were asked today.
Sure. Okay, with that, we'll adjourn the hearing and adjourn the committee.
Not threatening to cut.